Nuketown Radioactive for September 5th, 2005.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Man, I love that quote. And, you know, even after the sequels, I still freaking love The Matrix. Actually, one of my goals coming up in the next couple of weeks, if I can somehow swing it, is just kind of pop some popcorn, get a beer out of the fridge, and just sit in the dark and watch The Matrix again, just because it's such a great movie. But anyway, I'm Ken Newquist. I'm your host. It's been a while since we've had a Radioactive come out. Probably close to a month, actually. And I apologize for that. The delays, though, if you've been following Radioactive, then you're familiar with what's been going on in my life. But just to recap, over the last 3 weeks or so between this podcast and the last one, I have left my old job, gone on vacation, and started my new job. And that hasn't really left a lot of time for anything Nuketown-related. I've been working on some stuff behind the scenes. I actually recorded a rough draft of this podcast, but I didn't really like the way it turned out. So I, inevitably went back, scrapped the whole thing, and decided to start over. But hopefully things are settling down. For those who hadn't heard one of the earlier podcasts, my new job is very cool. It's similar to my old job. I'm a web application developer. I work at a small college which is down the street from me. And when I say down the street from me, I'm not trying to be clever. It is really just down the street from me. It's about 8 blocks from my house. So my commute went from about an hour a day each way to about 10 minutes each way. I'm still working on time in it. I think it's somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes, depending on how fast I'm walking and whether or not I stop for coffee. So it's pretty cool, but it's a lot of work. Just gearing up for a new job. Spending time researching stuff on my own time to get caught up with where the college is at, what they're doing. You work at one place for 7 years, you get kind of used to the way that they did things, and to jump into a new job, well, it can be a little different, but different in a good way. So, anyway, I'm getting acclimated, my family's getting acclimated. Fortunately, we didn't actually have to move, because the place where my new job is in my same neighborhood where I've been living for the last 9 years, so pretty damn cool, if I do say so myself, and really opportune given the price of gas. driving an hour in New Jersey when gas was at like $1.20, not so much a big deal. Driving into New Jersey when gas is $3.20, pretty much a bigger deal. Now, there's a couple of other things I wanted to talk about, just kind of news-related or just me-related, whatever. One of the running themes over the last couple of podcasts has been, in anticipation of moving over to this new job, was, oh my god, when am I going to listen to my podcasts? I go from having 2 hours a day when I can listen to my podcasts, and my audiobooks for that matter, to, about 20 minutes a day. I gotta say, folks, I love podcasting, I love listening to podcasts, and now I suddenly find this void where, I have to figure out some way to occupy it. So I have come up with one solution, though. It's called World of Warcraft, because, obviously, when you're playing World of Warcraft, there's kind of like two different modes. There's the active social mode, where you're out adventuring with your friends, hacking and slashing, and generally having a good time, and then there's kind of the downtime mode, where you need to go out and do the stuff that supports your character. So, for example, my mage, Zalandrin, is an herbalist and a alchemist. So he needs to go out and gather the various herbs and stuff that he needs in order to create his potions. Well, it takes a while, it's fun. I find it fun. I find it very relaxing just to kind of explore the world and gather herbs and fight the occasional monster. I know other people find it tedious, but, to each their own. But I realized, hey, you know what? This is perfect time for me to listen to podcasts. I can just fire up a bunch of podcasts into my iTunes queue, launch Warcraft, play Warcraft for an hour or two, listen to my podcasts, and suddenly I found some of that time I need, right? So that was my one little insight into how to listen to my podcasts. I think the other thing is I may just be transitioning away from some of the longer podcasts and trying to listen more to the ones that are more along the lines of 20 minutes. I think 40 minutes is probably my limit because that is that's the limit of my commute nowadays. If I'm walking really slowly, I may also listen to a few at work. You know, I've been more in just kind of learning mode and trying to figure things out. So I haven't had the opportunity to just kind of push through something. You know, I haven't had many tedious assignments where you're just doing a lot of data entry or setup or something where I can listen to something in the background. For me, when I'm actually trying to engage my brain, I can't listen to podcasts because I'm always trying to actually listen. I just can't have the voices on in the background. But anyway, that's enough rambling about me and my freaking podcasts. One other note of interest was, it's of interest to me, is bandwidth. You know, and I think every podcast eventually has this conversation, right? So it's my turn. This past month in August, when I moved Nuketown over to its new hosting service, I decided I was going to put Radioactive onto Nuketown proper. Up until now, I've been hosting it on my .Mac account. And the reason why I wanted to put it on Nuketown.com was to try to get a feel for how many people are actually listening to the podcast and to get a feel for what the traffic was. And, oh my God. about halfway through the month of August, Nuketown had used about 14 gigabytes worth of traffic. And the show file had generated 3,018 hits, although I mean I'm sure that's not the same as the number of people who are actually listening to it, but man, a lot of traffic. It exceeded the bandwidth for the site twice. The limits have been set fairly low. I think I first set it at 5 gigabytes and 10 gigabytes. Actually, the hosting provider that I'm on now, a friend and I share it, so we have a couple of sites that are hosted on it, and it allows us to reallocate bandwidth as necessary. And I think at this rate, Nuketown is going to use up all the bandwidth for all the freaking sites. So I don't know what I'm going to do about that. I have to experiment a little bit. I think BitTorrent is definitely in our future. I think I'm going to probably stick to .Mac for a little while. I may actually put the new show up on Nuketown.com just to see if we get the same kind of traffic hit this month. And kind of go from there. The other thing that I found interesting was that when Nuketown Radioactive went live, I saw an initial surge of traffic after the show went up around August 12th and 13th, and then another huge surge about a week later around August 19th, 20th, and I have no idea what caused it. So, I don't know, it's certainly interesting, and I'm definitely keeping an eye on it, because, you know, that is the Achilles heel of the whole podcasting thing. Bandwidth is expensive.
We're back with another exciting installment of Interview with a Zombie. My guest today is the zombie formerly known as Bob. Bob, before the break, you were telling us about your love for the sci-fi podcast network, TSFPN.com. Why, yes, Bob, it certainly does have something for everyone. Well, of course you're a busy zombie. I mean, who isn't these days? That's why you're glad TSFPN has collected the best in podcasting all in one convenient place. Not until after you finished your interview. Well, there you have it, folks. Straight from the zombie's mouth, TSFPN.com, the place for out-of-this-world entertainment.
So despite the fact that I don't necessarily have time to listen to them, I have continued to look for new podcasts, especially geeky and gaming podcasts. One of them that I just heard of is called Dice Make Bonk, and these folks just contacted me. Well, actually, at this point, it was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. But anyway, they contacted me after Radioactive 13 just to let me know that their first show had gone up. And I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but it looks to be pretty cool. It definitely looks to be something that I'm interested in. From the site, they say two guys pontificate, wrangle, and generally... They don't actually say it like that because I, of course, have to mangle it, but here's what they actually say. Man, you gotta love the screw-ups, right? Okay, so, two guys pontificate, wrangle, and generally shoot the breeze about tabletop role-playing. So, hey, that's right up my alley. Gotta love the role-playing game, the role-playing game podcasts, especially since there's so freaking many of them. You know, I think it's Knights of the Dinner Table 106... Might be 107. I'm not sure. I have to. One of the my tasks for this weekend is to actually to try and do something with my comic books. But anyway, either Radioactive number 107 or Knights of Dinner Table 106 or 107 has my podcast role playing game podcast roundup. And you know, when I wrote that column, I felt like I'm kind of stretching here. You know, I included a few that were a little bit outside of role playing games. But, you know, I really wanted to do a column on podcasts, and now, oh my god, there are so many role-playing game podcasts that I think, you know, maybe a couple months from now I may have to revisit the topic. But we'll see, you know, things need to shake out. So anyway, check out Dice Make Bunk. It looks to be a really cool podcast. While you're at it, you might want to check out Nuketown's revised podcast directory. There will be a link to this, and actually to Dice Make Bunk in the show notes. Nuketown's had a podcast directory for a while, and it had really been growing at a fairly fast little clip, and what had originally started off as one category on Nuketown really needed to be subdivided into a bunch of sub-ones. So that's what I've done. I've gone back, and I've broken it up into, like, I think 7 or 8 different subcategories: science fiction, fantasy, role-playing, geek, whatever. So anyway, I think it's much more effective than it was before. If you're looking for podcasts, definitely go and check out my podcast directory on Nuketown.
Hello, children. Are you ready to have fun today?
Oh, it's time for some swearing and it's time for some fun. It's time for some essays, so let's get begun. It's time for something that certainly isn't hip, where all the nerds hang out at Geek Foo Action Grip. Oh, grip. Everybody who listens to this podcast needs to get a grip.
This is a podcast where you'll hear a mother.
Damn it, I am the mother here!
A fangirl.
I've wanted you from the moment.
A geek.
I am mighty!
A gamer.
I want to cast magic missile.
And a writer.
Mistaken identities, shipwreck, pirate king, a bit with a dog, and love triumphant.
Talk about, well, whatever the hell comes to her mind, and read various geeky essays, often discussing things like the homoerotic dance of the frat boy, the various geek crushes that people get, anywhere from Will Wheaton to the former host of Blue's Clues, Steve Burns.
Will you help me?
Very odd stories from a geeky childhood, and simple delusions of grandeur.
When the world is mine, your death shall be quick and painless.
If you like David Sedaris and Sarah Vowell, but you think they need a geekier edge, then you should listen to my podcast. Geek Foo Action Grip. GeekFooActionGrip.com. Other action figures sold separately. A proud member of the Science Fiction Podcast Network at TSFPN.com.
So playing that promo for Geek Foo reminds me that Murr actually has a new podcast out. It's called I Should Be Writing. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. That seems to be the theme with this particular edition of Radioactive. I mentioned lots of podcasts that I haven't actually listened to. But anyway, I mean, it's Murr. Come on, you know you're going to like it. So in this particular podcast, she talks about writing, her efforts at writing fiction. She interviews folks. So it looks to be really cool. I've got it downloaded. I've got it queued up. So, you know, that next little Warcraft run I have, I'll be listening to Murr talk about writing, which, that's a pretty good theme, because, you know, when I'm playing Warcraft, I should be writing, too. So now I want to talk about somebody who has written a whole bunch, unlike me. Namely, Ben Bova, and in this podcast I'm going to be reviewing his novel Saturn, which is part of his Grand Tour series of books. The Grand Tour is basically his look at the planets of the solar system from a fictional standpoint. It has a shared universe in which the Earth has been taken over by various religious fundamentalist groups who, while they may disagree with one another, can all agree that the infidels are going to burn unless they toe the line. Now, unfortunately, they have some... In this particular book, they have some malcontents who just won't get along and toe the line. So they say, okay, well, we're going to stick these 10,000 scientists, freethinkers, and other malcontents onto a space habitat, and we're going to shoot them off to Saturn, where they can be by themselves and do what they want to do, and explore the ringed planet and its moon Titan, which in this particular novel is known to contain life of a very simple and basic sort. These free thinkers are traveling there on a gigantic cylindrical space habitat, which is called Goddard. It's basically a huge, long can, I guess you could say, which... It's a really cool environment. I liked this environment when we saw it in Arthur C. Clarke's Rendezvous with Rama. We didn't even actually get to spend a lot of time there, particularly as a society. In Arthur C. Clarke's book, Rama is an extraterrestrial vehicle which arrives in our solar system, and a small crew of people go to explore it. And it's definitely alien, but it was so cool because it was so big, and you could get a feel for what Rama would be like if it were a living, breathing thing meant to obviously hold tens of thousands of people. In this book, we get to actually live there. Bova creates a somewhat similar habitat in so much as it's cylindrical, and you know, when you're inside of the Goddard space habitat, and you're standing on a plane, you can see the plane curving off to the left and the right, and if your eye follows it, eventually you're going to look up and you're going to see another plane opposite you. So that's just a really cool thing to contemplate, you know, seeing the world kind of hanging above your head. And then at night, when night falls on Goddard and you know, the lights go down, the constellations that you see are all of the little settlements within the habitat, which, you know, it's just an intoxicating idea. I love the idea of this habitat. Unfortunately, you know, Bova, I don't know what it is. You know, the thing that struck me about this book as I was reading through it is that it seems to me like Bova hasn't lived in a town with 10,000 people in it. Or if he did, it was a while ago, because he doesn't necessarily capture all the idiosyncrasies that come with living in that kind of a small town atmosphere. Now, granted, in this book, you know, all these people are being dumped into this, so they obviously didn't grow up in a small town. But I went to school in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania, which is a town of about 10,000 people. You know, tack on another, I guess, 3,000 or so people for the college. I guess maybe it's more up to like 4,000 or whatever now. But anyway, the point was that you had like this small kind of insular group of people that, you know, they're all very nice, but, well, they could be very nice, but, you know, everybody turns inward. Everyone's very focused on small town politics when you're cut off from the rest of the world like that, because this was in central Pennsylvania where you had to drive, you know, 40 minutes to get to anywhere. So everything, even the smallest things take on, you know, kind of like life or death insistency. And if you have a big project that's coming up, whoa, man, you will get into fistfights at town council meetings. I'm not kidding. I mean, I was a journalism major when I was at Lock Haven, and you know, I went down to meetings, or town council meetings, that got into screaming matches over what was called the Dyke Levee Project, where they're going to build this big dike to protect and levee to protect the town from flooding, and there were people who were vehemently against it, to the point where, you know, they were willing to throw down over this, you know. So I have the kind of experience, and now I come into this book Saturn, and I'm like, all right, I know, I just don't get it. I don't get why we're not seeing more of the small town dynamics coming into this book. And this is why it's important, and this is why it kind of, the suspension of disbelief fails for me. It never fails from a scientific standpoint. It only fails from a political standpoint. Because in this book, one of the major themes behind it is that those fundamentalists who sent all these freethinkers off to Saturn, well, they weren't really going to let them live their own lives. You didn't think they were going to be able to get away with that, did you? No, they send a small cadre of people who they have charged with taking over the settlement. And they're led by a man named Avery, who is basically attempting to orchestrate this conspiracy to win... public approval for a very democratic, very individualist constitution, but a constitution that has a clause built into it that will basically allow him to declare martial law after an emergency and establish a sort of Soviet meets Jerry Falwell theocracy. Excuse me. Now, opposing, and here's where it kind of falls apart for me, opposing him and his little cadre as they attempt to get this constitution together, as they attempt to, you know, and the steps that lead up to this constitution is that they are, they organize different naming contests for the different features within the space station, and then, you know, actually the orchestration of creating the constitution that will govern these people. opposing him as he's going through this and just kind of maneuvering everyone and using the jargon of liberty and freedom, which, you know, whenever you hear people going, politicians spewing that, you got to start going, what are they actually talking about? But opposing him are no one. Despite being filled with a bunch of free-thinking individualists, the population of the habitat are portrayed as either being unthinking followers who latch on to Avery's message without a second thought, or passive drones too caught up in their own lives to pay attention to the maneuvers of Avery towards dictatorship. And you know what? It's just, you know, even people who accidentally... There are... given the people who are supposed to be on this space station, I mean, I work at a college... I worked at a university. I've worked in newspapers. I know the kind of people that Bova is talking about here. And you know what? They will oppose people just on principle. You know, they will. There are people in this kind of a group who will put up a fight just to say that they put up a fight. Never mind even getting into philosophical debates. I mean, you can't tell me that there ain't a libertarian or two, or even, you know, a diehard liberal or... amongst this group who is going to look at what this Constitution is doing, look at Avery's maneuverings, and say, hey, you know what, folks? This seems kind of familiar to me. I think this is bad, you know? And you know, even... I kept waiting for someone like that to show up, and no one ever did. The only person on the space station who has even a clue what's going on is the station administrator, who's kind of like the high muckety-muck who was charged with running the station until a government was established, and he refuses to act because it was interfere. He's a sociologist, and he won't act because he doesn't want to interfere with the social experiment that is Goddard. Man, it just... I don't know, it just annoyed me. It just... The whole political interplay just... It just didn't work for me. And it really made it kind of feel... hard to be sympathetic with these people who, you know, they all, it's like you're almost sitting back and going, well, you know what, if you guys weren't willing to oppose this idiot as he was trying to orchestrate this, I haven't said orchestrate too much, but, you know, as this guy is trying to put together this this theocratic government, this tyrannical government, then you know what, you get what you deserve, man. But anyway, The good thing about this book is that it isn't all politics. There is some cool science that goes on here. And it happens against the backdrop of the politics. And as the station finally gets to within Saturn orbit, they make a really fascinating and very cool discovery about Saturn's rings, which, you know, I'll just applaud Bova for this. I don't want to give it away in case anybody reads the book. But it was pretty cool. He comes up with a really good theory, a really... fun theory as to why Saturn's rings are able to perpetuate themselves, why we are able to see them right now when every theory says that they should be gone in a couple hundred million years. And, you know, it was pretty cool. It was definitely a cool theory, but, you know, was it enough to have read the rest of the book? I don't know. I really don't know. I think I need to read one or two other books in the series, because I do like the setup. I do like the ideas that are in here to see if this was just kind of an aberration or if they're all this kind of messed up. So I think in order to make this book better, it would really have been nice if there had been a few people who were actually in opposition to Avery. Even if they ended up being like taken out by Avery and his goons, it would have been nice to see someone who put up an honest-to-God, principled opposition to what Avery was doing, and who could see through just kind of his transparent ploys. And I don't think they're transparent just because, you know, I'm the person who's getting to sit there and see Avery and his goons putting together this plan. I think it's the kind of thing where, you know, anytime you see a group of people coming together and trying to, like, hoodwink the others, you get a feel for what's going on. There's this kind of alien vibe. And I don't think anybody picked up on it on this space habitat. So I really would have liked to have seen... some really good opposition to Avery. I think that would have set up a much better book, a much more enjoyable book. All right, that about does it for Radioactive. I wanted to try and keep this one a little short so we could just knock it out and get it up onto the site as soon as possible. I just want to close out with how to contact Radioactive. You can get me via email at nuketown@gmail.com. You can get me on Skype at Nuketown. The username is just Nuketown. You can also visit the web forum for Radioactive, which is on Nuketown's website. The TS, the Science Fiction Podcast Network forum, is down again. Apparently, they're doing more service over the Labor Day weekend, so I can't send you over to them. But we do have a forum up on Nuketown.com, so I encourage everyone to please check it out. Stop by, tell me what you think of the show, tell me what you'd like to see, that sort of thing. One last thing, I am looking for promos. If you've got a podcast and you'd like to see it promoted on Nuketown, please send me an email and let me know. Actually, you can just send send me the promo at nuketown@gmail.com. I have plenty of space left on my Gmail account, so you know, you can just send it on in. But that's it for now, folks. I do hope to get one of these out sooner rather than later, so hopefully I'll be talking to you soon. Bye.